Stand, please.
Chair here. That's really cute.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 11-1553, Arthur Gilbert, appellate of CNN and Napolitano, to the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security.
Mr. Goldsmith, good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The 2001 summary judgment should be reversed, or the summary judgment as to the 2001 issues, because the jury should be permitted to hear the credibility of the witnesses and determine who is telling the truth. An undisputed fact is that Jaksta told Pitts he could not get a promotion of Gilbert past the front office. Front office official Heinrich testified that had Jaksta recommended Gilbert, Heinrich likely would have promoted Gilbert, since he would normally follow director's recommendations. The question for the jury is, why did Jaksta say that? What did he mean? A reasonable jury could easily conclude that the answer is that Mr. Gilbert had reversed a high-profile termination that had garnered national attention through his mixed MSPB EEO appeal, and the agency, for that reason, did not wish to promote him. Numerous highly material disputed facts whose interpretation should be up to the jury are present here. For instance, Pitts testifies that Jaksta knew about the cocaine seizure incident that led to Gilbert's MSPB EEO case when Gilbert first came to headquarters, or which led him to come to headquarters. But Jaksta denies that. Pitts testifies that he discussed Gilbert's prior MSPB EEO case with Jaksta when Gilbert first arrived. But Jaksta denies that. Gilbert testifies that he confronted Jaksta in July 2000 and told him that he had an EEO matter, settled it, and was looking for a fresh start and expecting fair treatment. But Jaksta denies hearing that. Mr. McGowan, within the management team, asked Mr. Pitts to supervise Gilbert when Gilbert first arrived. He said, "Art, I want you to supervise him because you're familiar with him and nobody else wants to supervise him." That's at page 500. Why did no one want to supervise Mr. Gilbert? Pitts testifies that he repeatedly recommended his supervisee Gilbert to Jaksta for promotion, but Jaksta denies ever hearing Mr. Pitts say that. Jaksta testified that Mr. Reif was better qualified than Mr. Gilbert, but Pitts, who supervised Reif immediately upon Reif's assuming the promotion at the same time that Reif was reassigned to what had been Gilbert's position, says that's absurd. The contrary is true. Gilbert was way better qualified. Indeed, Pitts says Gilbert's qualifications for GS-14 in the 2000 to 2001 timeframe were superior to Reif's, indeed, sufficiently so as to, quote, slap Pitts in the face or, quote, kick Pitts someplace else. Jaksta testified to facts showing time and grade was violated with regard to the promotion of Mr. Reif. Then he reversed himself when he realized what he had done. Jaksta says he told Gilbert he had performance issues back in the 2000-2001 timeframe, but Gilbert denies that. Jaksta says he told Pitts that Gilbert had performance issues, but Pitts denies that Jaksta said that to him. Jaksta says that now that headquarters experience was critical in the promotion of Reif, but just a few months before or a year before the promotion of Reif, or a little over a year, he had selected and promoted Mr. Van Ravensway to GS-14 directly from the field with no headquarters experience to the same position, GS-14 program manager. Jaksta admits that sometimes he might recommend somebody who has more time in headquarters, and other times he might recommend somebody with less time in headquarters. That's at page 735. Jaksta says he didn't promote Van Ravensway, said at first that he didn't promote Van Ravensway directly from the field to a GS-14 position at page 665, but then at 668 he admits that he might have. And in fact, that's what he did, the records show. Jaxta denies knowing about the affair between Polamany and Milne, who was selected. But Pitt says Jaxta told him he was considering not promoting Milne due to the indiscretion in Milne's personal life. Jaxta denies taking Polamany's recommendation, then admits that he might have. All of these are fact disputes that clearly warrant trial.
Let me ask you about the Brodsky promotion. The government says it had an alternative, non-discriminatory reason. And that was, is it Ahern? Is that his name? Ahern?
Yes.
That he rejected him because of the lack of trust due to the getting the documents in the other case.
Yes.
So isn't that a non-discriminatory justification that isn't, there's no contrary evidence on that?
Right. Well, the evidence, Judge Tatel, is that that the process of trying to obtain documents and then obtaining some documents that Mr. Gilbert needed and should have been provided by the agency in discovery in his MSPB case resulted in his being able to clear his name and obtain the reinstatement.
But his point was is he got documents inappropriately. He used documents inappropriately that were confidential documents. And that's separate from the underlying merits of the case.
Well, Judge Tatel, I think that it's not separate. I think that what it is that is inextricably tied up with Mr. Gilbert's MSPB EEO case. In order to, that was protected activity that he had to engage in order to.
If we don't agree with you about that, I mean, if we think the obtaining of the confidential documents is separate and something that the department can raise without regard to the nature of the underlying proceedings, that is, that they were discrimination, then would you agree that the government's entitled to summary judgment on this one?
Absolutely not, because what we have is a further situation where Mr. Ahern was well aware of and apprised of the litigation that Gilbert was already involved in against the agency in the 2007 timeframe, namely the case that brings us here today. And that activity by Mr. Gilbert was also protected. And what we have in the Brodsky-Gilbert comparison is a disparity in qualifications so extreme that it can only be pretextual for Mr. Ahern to be alleging anything else. And let me point out that the agency, in its settlement agreement with Mr. Gilbert.
If his reason is non-discriminatory, it doesn't make any difference whether their qualifications are dramatically different.
Well, unless that reason is pretextual.
Well, but you've pretty much conceded that it isn't in your reply brief. You say the issue isn't whether Ahern honestly believes that he rejected plaintiff for having obtained the documents, as that is undisputed.
What's undisputed is that Ahern didn't like it that Gilbert had obtained the documents. I noticed that in my reply brief reading over it to prepare for today, too, that perhaps that could have been stated more artfully. What's undisputed is that that was in Ahern's mind, not that that was the sole reason and that there was no discriminatory or retaliatory animus in Ahern at the point at which he made the decision. So what's undisputed is that Ahern was thinking about the documents. I believe and maintain that that was protected activity that on Gilbert's part that is, and we've discussed that already, so I won't belabor it. But I think that certainly doesn't end the inquiry, even if the court were to determine that somehow Ahern was privileged to take action against Gilbert even after the settlement agreement with the immunity language in it, because Gilbert had gone to seek the documents. So perhaps I should have stated that more artfully in my brief. And I just would add that we have, as to the Ahern-Brodsky selection, Mr. Ahern, his argument is, or that the basis for his decision is trust and reliability and that sort of thing, and then he went and selected someone who had demonstrably shown that she should not have been afforded that kind of trust and responsibility based on her own conduct in applying for the position, not to mention the fact that she had no qualifications for it. So I think under those circumstances that there can be a little doubt that that decision was retaliatory on Ahern's part, largely due to the prior activity in the past, but also the ongoing antagonism between the parties. And I see that my time is expiring.
All right, we'll give you a minute or so.
Let me touch briefly on the
well, your time has expired.
So oh, I'm
we'll
sorry.
We'll give you a minute or two in reply.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All right. Ms. Lowe?
Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Lowe with the United States Attorney's Office, representing the Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection. This appeal involves Gilbert's challenges to decisions made by the Customs and Border Protection to select individuals with demonstrated experience at agency headquarters for GS-14 program officer positions that Gilbert began applying for a mere 2 months after he first began working at agency headquarters. Gilbert failed to come forward with evidence that the agency's business judgment as to what qualifications it deemed important or it prioritized in its selection decisions were somehow tainted by impermissible discriminatory or retaliatory animus. Similarly, Gilbert's challenges to his non-selection in 2007 for the chief of staff position to the assistant commissioner of the Office of Field Operations fails for lack of evidence. The record amply demonstrates that Mr. Ahern selected the employee who had already been performing essentially the same functions that he was looking for in a chief of staff. And in any event, he reasonably doubted Gilbert's ability to preserve and protect agency confidences. I want to start with talking about the Brodsky selection in 2007. Mr. Gilbert's argument is that Mr. Ahern discriminated and retaliated against him by selecting Ms. Brodsky because he admitted that he had the issue with the documents in mind at the time he made the selection. But the evidence is clear that Mr. Ahern knew what he knew of the document collection based on what he had heard from Ms. Ganger's testimony in the separate disciplinary proceeding involving Ms. Ganger. All he knew was Ms. Ganger's testimony that Mr. Gilbert had improperly asked her at a time when he was not an agency employee to obtain confidential official use only documents and provide them to Gilbert at a hotel. And Mr. Ahern testifies that Mr. Gilbert should have known that these were confidential documents not to be used by non-agency employees. And that is separate and apart from what the underlying purpose was for Mr. Gilbert in obtaining these documents improperly. And there can be no doubt that the agency had a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for and non-retaliatory for selecting Ms. Brodsky and not selecting Mr. Gilbert. As to the other vacancy announcements from the 2000 to 2001 time period.
Just to pause over that one.
Yes.
What about the difference between Brodsky's actual qualifications and those listed in the vacancy announcement?
Well, Ms. Brodsky did have the qualifications sought by the agent, the vacancy announcement. The vacancy announcement sought an employee who would assist Mr. Ahern in working diligently with other principal agency officials to ensure that he would be provided with authoritative and current use and information for use in making decisions.
Let's say that she was to serve as a policy advisor, liaison, manager of other employees, supervisor of other employees?
She had performed some of those duties, not officially, and she was not officially a supervisor, but she had staffed work or delegated work assignments in her prior role as a GS-13 program specialist when she was working for Mr. Ahern. So he knew, based on her capabilities in that role, that she was capable of performing these duties, and with a little instruction, she could certainly, with a little more supervision, she certainly had the potential to fulfill those roles.
And what do you say to the other side's claim that she lied on her application?
There is no evidence of that. She testified that she assisted Mr. Ahern with his duties. She helped develop policy. She helped staff issue assignments. She attended meetings on his behalf, and she coordinated follow-up between him and his deputy, Mr. Heffelfinger. And Mr. Ahern's deputy testified that Ms. Brodsky had already been performing a lot of the same duties that they were already looking for and that the vacancy announcement called for, which was largely a role to assist Mr. Ahern in facilitating his relationship with other agency officials, senior agency officials, and making sure that he had obtained all the necessary information he needed in order to make policy decisions. And that was what she had essentially been doing before she became chief of staff. Now, as to the, turning to the 2000 to 2001 vacancy announcements, there is ample testimony in the record that agency officials, senior managers, believed headquarters environment to be very different, materially different from field work. The issue isn't whether Mr. Gilbert had sufficient field work. Mr. Jagsta says he did have field experience, and that experience could be helpful. The problem is senior managers viewed headquarters experience to be fundamentally different in the nature of work, and they wanted people who had demonstrated an understanding of how headquarters worked. Mr. Milne had done so.
Let me just interrupt you for a moment.
Yes.
About Mill. It's Milne, is that how you pronounce it?
It's Milne.
Okay.
Yes.
In your brief, your position is that Gilbert failed to exhaust his remedies with respect to Milne, correct?
That's correct.
And the plaintiff responds that this is forfeited because, contrary to Rule 8C, the government failed to raise this in their answer.
We did raise it in our first response.
Yeah, but not in the answer.
And we did raise it, however, in our motion.
You understand that Rule 8C requires that it be raised in the answer?
I do, Your Honor, but I would note that the government did raise it in its initial response to the first complaint in our motion to dismiss and for definite answer.
Are there any cases to discuss whether that's good enough?
Well, I would note that in the Harris case, and in this court's case in Harris, the court noted that, and that's 126 F 3rd 339, and I apologize for not having raised this in my brief, but the court noted that if this court does determine to remand it to the district court, the government could at that time move for leave to amend our response, our answer, and
but the you realize Harris does say that it's forfeited if not raised in the answer.
It is forfeited, but it is not waived, and I think under the liberal pleading rules, Harris does say the district court shall freely give leave to amend when justice so requires.
Yeah, but that's not up to us, correct?
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So one more question on RIFI. Plaintiff's counsel quoted Pitt's testimony, who says he says the difference between the two large enough to slap you in the face. If you are making the selection based on qualifications and experience, then the qualifications and experience of Gilbert would dwarf that of Riffey.
Of Mr. Reif.
Yeah.
Mr. Pitts also testified that he felt that Mr. Reif was qualified for promotion to GS-14. Mr. Pitts did testify that as to his view that Mr. Reif was qualified for promotion.
Well, that doesn't really respond to the question. I mean, you can have two people who are both qualified, but one is so far better qualified that the choice of the less qualified, but nevertheless qualified one would be just...
Mr. Pitts' testimony, first of all, is devoid of any specifics as to what about Mr. Gilbert's experience that made him, in 2001, far more qualified.
A jury hearing that could conclude that that the government's reason for not promoting Gilbert to this position was pretext.
I don't think a jury would draw that conclusion knowing that Mr. Pitts had, in 2001, had not supervised Mr. Reif until after the promotion. At the time of their promotions, he had no basis for evaluating the relative...
But didn't he supervise Riffy after the promotion?
After the promotion, yeah. But prior to that, yeah. At the time their application packets were presented to the selecting officials, Mr. Pitts had no basis for evaluating Mr. Reif's qualifications. Uh-huh. And his testimony is actually... It's clear that he believed Mr. Reif was qualified for promotion, and that all that points to is, you know, it may be a close call, but the jury, a reasonable jury, is going to assume that the employer, in a close call, made a business judgment as to what qualifications it believed to be more important. Mr. Reif had 2 years, had 2 years of headquarters experience at the time. He had developed risk management programs and monitored their implementation. He had served as a technical expert on secondary and personal search procedures, and he detailed all of this in his application. Mr. Gilbert, by contrast, gave a very perfunctory 3-sentence generic description of what he had done at headquarters. Any selecting official or recommending official reviewing these relative applications would not get any sense of what work Mr. Gilbert had actually performed at agency headquarters.
Did it say in the vacancy announcement that headquarters experience was important? I thought it didn't.
It did not specify that headquarters work was important, but I think the
qualification... Could the jury conclude that that's pretext, that it's not in it?
No, I don't think so. I think there's... what the vacancy announcement called for, the skills that the vacancy announcement said were necessary for these GS-14 positions, such as planning, developing, implementing new systems, these are all the qualifications or tasks that headquarters called for.
Why didn't it say headquarters experience rather than say something in the way you're saying one would have to infer that? Why can't a jury think that if experience was the principal thing, that they would have mentioned headquarters experience expressly? In fact, it says that you have to have knowledge of customs laws, regulations, and procedures related to field operations. So the only actual area of operations it mentions are field.
Well, the fact is that headquarters work was to design national programs to be implemented in the field.
I understand that. That may actually be the correct answer. But the question is whether a jury couldn't wonder why, if you're going to rest everything on headquarters, you don't mention the word headquarters.
I don't think that's a reasonable interpretation, given that headquarters, the type of work that was being performed at headquarters is, I believe, inherent in the vacancy announcement and the qualifications that it called for. And it's not, it first of all, is a demonstrably non-discriminatory characteristic, and
it is if it's the actual characteristic.
That's
the nature of pretext.
Well, and all the managers testify that in most cases, for the most part, headquarters experience, they tended to promote people from within headquarters because they demonstrated that they understood how the headquarters
wasn't the only
worked.
Difference between Reif and Gilbert 1 year with respect to headquarters experience? One was 2 years, one was 1 year.
Reef had been there 2 years longer. Yes, one year longer.
One year longer.
Yes.
Could a jury think that that's not significant enough difference?
I think that's the sort of close call that a jury would defer to the manager's assessment, business judgment, as to what characteristic that it found more important. And this is similar to the court's decision in Jackson, where the qualification of familiarity with the agency's data management system was not specifically listed.
But if you say that the reason you've made this decision is more headquarters experience, and it's actually just 1 year more, well, if the reason with respect to Milne was headquarters experience, now we're down to about a year and a half, about a half a year more. Is that right?
Well, I believe that's correct.
By that time, he had almost a year and a half of experience.
Right, and the question is, what did they do during that time at headquarters? And Milne had demonstrated that he had leadership skills. He had led the Northern Border Program and protected the agency's interests. And frankly, it comes down to the senior official's judgment of who had demonstrated that they understood how this headquarters process worked, and they had...
What was Milne's experience in headquarters?
Milne was he had been in PDAT, the data analysis.
And that's not
section.
What he was going to be doing in this new job. He wasn't going to be doing data analysis.
And then he had been transferred to the land border system. But all of that is part of the Office of Field Operations and Passenger Programs, integrating the various components of passenger programs to develop national policy. This isn't whether you had field experience and could be an inspector in the field. That wasn't what the type of work that was being performed.
Was being a data analyst enough experience?
That it was part of analyzing devising trial programs to detect weaknesses in cargo and passenger processing. And part of that does involve analyzing data. For example, the vacancy announcement does also call for knowledge of analytical and evaluative techniques and methods related to process redesign. All of that is, it's not a singularly focused system on field operations and how to do a inspection at the field. It was developing these national systems and having a larger national view of things, of how customs processes worked. I see that I've gone well over my time.
Judge Tatel. All right. Thank you.
I would respectfully ask that the court affirm this grant of summary judgment. Thank you.
Does Mr. Gold? All right. Why don't you take 1 minute, Mr. Goldsmith?
I believe had I reserved time or had I overgone the last time? Is that what happened? No problem. I'd just like to focus for a moment on, first of all, the vacancy announcement for the 2001 positions that Milne and Reef were selected for. It says on page 1035 that the work involves crossing all transportation systems, land, sea, and air, involving both cargo and passenger enforcement. Mr. Reef had only done data analysis work in passenger enforcement in his entire career. He had no exposure to it otherwise, and he had no exposure to sea operations, and 3 or 4 months in his initial job in Laredo of exposure to land operations. He had never supervised anyone. He had, at the bare minimum of credentials to be selected for this, other than the fact that he didn't have the time and grade, which is another issue. I'd just like to touch briefly in the few seconds I have on the fact that it's clear that this was a LICA-related situation, as in Payne, for Milne. Same type of adverse action, same bases. Continuing issue was stated by Gilbert in his original complaint. The investigation went on for another year after Mr. Gilbert had mentioned the Milne selection, and for that reason, assuming that the Harris situation didn't cover it sufficiently, what we have here is that as to the Milne selection, It was before the investigator. The investigator put documents in the record related to it. Milne filed his application in a way that was timely for that. So I believe that the Milne claim was Leica related to the Reef claim, and that for that reason, and that the court should use that ground for reversing as to the Milne claim. Again, I think that it's telling that the disparity between Reef's qualifications and Gilbert's qualifications, the disparity between Brodsky's qualifications and Gilbert's qualifications, the claim as to the Milne Reef selection by the agency, that headquarters experience is the key. Again, as Judge Garland's questions resulted in revealing, that was not the criterion that the agency was relying on initially.
All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you need to wind it up.
Very well. I think I've said what I need to say, and thank you very much. And I ask that the court reverse the summary judgment decision of the district court. Thank you very much.